know, once we all get settled and out from the rain will stop. So some of you were here earlier, and some of you are new. What I would like to do is I'd like to start by telling you a little bit about the Green Creek School, the history, very briefly, and how we started. And then go on to talk about our core values of this school. We started the Green Creek School in 2014. And there were 42 children. There were three adults at the school, and then me. And we had to move urban garden. We didn't have our facilities to be in, or we did have some facilities, but they weren't ready for us. So we started by just being in an abandoned urban garden for 10 weeks until it got too cold and too dark. Those of you who are familiar with Denmark know that when October rolls around, the mornings are very dark and it gets dark fairly early. And even if we could stand the cold, it's hard to have a whole school day in the fall. And the idea for the school that Fia and I had was that we wanted to educate children to joyfully and actively take part in transition. Would you like to come and sit, or are you just sniffing? There's a bit of a log right there, but it's out in the rain.
There's lots of room here.
There's room here. If you have a sit pad, you have a sit pad.
I'm sorry.
Not at all. The idea was to prepare children to participate in transition, that is, the movement that transitions our society from being dependent on fossil fuels and dependent on economic growth to being something completely new and exciting that we don't yet know what will look like. And it was important to us that both going to school and participating in such a political movement would be something that was joyful for the children. So we wanted to harness children's own joyful everyday life for learning and prepare them for this really uncertain and, in some cases, perhaps even catastrophic future that our planet faces. And he and I came from a Waldorf background. Our children went to Waldorf school. But in the beginning, we thought it would be, arrogantly, we thought it would be an updated 21st century Waldorf school. But as we went about gathering tools for working with outdoor schooling and self-determination, it grew into something different. So the way it looked was we have small groups of 15 to 17 children. Most of them have animal names, the groups. The children choose the animal names at the beginning of the school year, and they just have to choose animals that you might find in Denmark. The only two groups that are an exception from this are the bees. They're the tiny ones, the little ones we have to be careful of. And then the oldest children are the pioneers. And if the pioneers wanted to change their name, maybe they could, but so far they just wanted to continue to be pioneers. We work in projects of 5 to 7 weeks. All the projects are created by the adults at the school. They're interdisciplinary, and usually they have what you could call three disciplinary columns. So you choose three subject areas to focus on. In the project that I described for some of you earlier, Utopia, there were actually four goals. There was a social-emotional goal, there was a craft goal working with wood and ropes, there was a social studies goal, and then there was a learning goal both for the children and the adults at the school to learn how to do a new kind of project. So as you see, there was only one actual academic goal in that list of four goals. The focus very much is, yes, academic, but also non-academic skills. Working with your hands, being outdoors, social emotional skills, yoga and mindfulness, a long list of a broader understanding of what it is we owe it to children to teach them and work with them on. And a very important component for us was self-determination. I don't know if any of you are familiar with the democratic school movement, such as Sudbury Valley. In Denmark, it's almost impossible to start a school on those principles due to the rules and regulations that govern, even though they're very, very, it's a wonderful place to work with a school because there's a free school law that allows parents to start their own schools. But having a school that allows children to decide what they want to learn and when they want to learn it is virtually impossible. but we wanted to work within the Danish framework to give the children the chance to make as many decisions as they could. So what do I have? I have the projects, interdisciplinary, no tests, no grades, but a lot of assessment. And I'm not sure how many of you are familiar with the two different kinds of assessment. There is formative assessment, where you go along and you try to figure out what's going on. And then there's, and I'm blanking on the word right now,
summative
assessment, which is at the end of a project or a learning activity and aims to measure how much you've learned. Doing formative assessment has been integrated in the school from the very start, and it's something as simple as cooking a meal for each other or having a party, but also creating all sorts of learning products, from artworks to functional things to a presentation or something more academic. The school has existed for 5 years now. It went from 42 children from grade 0 through 5 and is now 0 through 9 and has about 150 students. And I think that basically covers it, just to give you some context here. And then I would like to tell you about a little project.
I think maybe we should start with saying what our aim is for this workshop.
Okay, mm-hmm. Yes.
Yeah.
So
our aim, because then if somebody do not want to comply with that, you were free to So the idea for us with this workshop is that we would like to support you, to facilitate for you to start your own radical project. Not necessarily a school, it can be actually just one lesson or just one tiny thing you do with a group of kids. But Karen's been working with the model that we have embodied right here with the rope. And when going into this risky thing of doing school in another way, it's super nice to have something else to lean back on. And yeah, for the next hour we'd like to invite you to make your own project plan using this tool. How does that sound?
Mm-hmm. Good. So I will start by telling about a project, and then I will walk the snail for you with that project so you see what the snail is about, and then we'll have you making your own snails.
Mm-hmm.
So I want you to imagine a forest in Denmark in the autumn, and we're going mushroom gathering. Mm-hmm. And the children are 10, 11 years old, and they're together with Rasmus. He's their teacher and outdoor guide. At the school, we try to change the language of talking about education, so we don't call him a teacher, we just call him an adult. There are children and adults. Children and adults, we're all learners. So Rasmus takes the children to the forest, and the activity is to gather mushrooms, because it's a mushroom gathering expedition. And everybody runs around, and Rasmus may encourage the children to seek in different places. And there's a goal of finding as many different kind of mushrooms as possible, maybe as many mushrooms as possible. It may not be stated on his part, maybe the children make up that themselves, as children are wont to do. So there they are, seeking in different parts of the forest for the mushrooms. They gather the mushrooms in white cloths, and then when they're done gathering, it's time for lunch. And they sit down at lunch, and they talk about what they've been doing, the different places they found the mushrooms. You all know what children are like. They're all excited. Well, we found one that's orange, or where did you find it? We found it behind the tree, or there was some in a little hollow, the one that's really damp. So they talk about where they found the mushrooms, and then they also get to talking more generally about mushrooms. I like mushrooms. I don't eat mushrooms. I went mushroom gathering with my grandparents in this same forest, and we didn't find half as many. There's this sort of, each of us has a personal experience, a personal relationship with mushrooms. After lunch, they stay in the group, and perhaps during their conversation, they have talked about the whole point of gathering mushrooms, which is that we're going to eat them. And what is the interesting parameter about mushrooms? Well, it's whether or not they're edible, whether they're poisonous. So the goal now is to sort these mushrooms, and perhaps sort them into edible and non-edible mushrooms, or perhaps you could make up your own category. So Rasmus encourages them to sort the mushrooms according to their own likes. you can decide how you want to sort them by group. And some of them sort by themselves. If they gather by themselves, some of them go together in groups and they sort. And some of them sort by the length of the stem or the color or the size, completely up to them. And when they're done sorting, they present to each other. It's really not that formal, this presentation. It's more of a conversation. Rasmus says, well, how many kinds of mushrooms did you find? And what parameters did you establish? He doesn't use the word parameter, but what are the categories? What did you choose to use as a way of sorting? And they explain to each other, and he says, well, did you run into any problems? And some of them will say, well, it was hard to decide whether the short white one with the round cap belonged with the short ones with the pointy caps or with the tall ones with the round caps. So they have a discussion of how it can be hard to determine where the mushroom belongs. Then they ride home on the train. And on the train, maybe they talk some more about mushrooms. They talk a little more about the mushroom hunting they've been on earlier and whether they like mushrooms and what happened. And that's the first day. On the second day, let me just make sure I didn't forget anything in that section there. Not so good at this extemporaneous talking necessarily. Yes. So the next day, there are two activities to do with mushrooms. One of them is that they start looking up their mushrooms. Maybe some of them go online, maybe some of them look in the mushroom book. In Denmark, there are also apps for gathering mushrooms. Maybe there are in Switzerland too, or in your home countries. So they try to identify the mushrooms. And then they present to each other what they found out. How did the sorting that they did the day before match up with the information that they got from the books or from the screens, from other forms of mediated knowledge? And then the teacher takes over, he pulls back a little bit, and he gives a lecture about scientific classification. And he talks about the similarities between the ways that the children sorted the mushrooms and the ways that botanists and biologists and zoologists sort the natural world around us. It's not a long lecture. It's a lecture that ties in with the activities that they've had earlier. And perhaps at this point, he has them journal about the process up till now. Perhaps at this point, they have a classroom discussion about what he has told them. Maybe they go back to their mushrooms and talk a little more. And then each of them decides on a product that they would like to make for this project. It sounds kind of loose when I say it this way. The children at the Green Free School are very used to this. Let's make a product. Some of the children will want to make the mushroom stew that all of this has been leading up to. They will prepare the mushrooms. I said mushroom stew, that's because they ended up making a mushroom stew, but it could be, I don't know, fricassee or whatever it is you do with mushrooms. Others will have other things they want to do with mushrooms. They maybe have been drawing the mushrooms in their sketchbook and they would like to make a poster and label the parts of the mushrooms, because now they've learned that it's perhaps, oh, I don't know what they're called, the stem, the cap, the gills, perhaps there are technical names for these. Others will say, well, we were really intrigued to find these very interesting mushrooms that grew in that little hollow, so we've now learned that this is called a habitat, and we want to draw at this habitat, or we want to make a diorama. The important thing is that the children choose their own products. And the teacher will walk around and guide them in their choices and help them with that. And at the very end, they will turn back and they will talk about their products. They will present their products to each other. They will eat the stew together, or the fricassee, or whatever it turned out to be. And the teacher will guide them in the conversation about the fricassee, about why it's important. They don't need guiding them. But if necessary, the teacher can nudge them to discuss. Why was it we sorted the mushrooms to begin with? It was for our own utility. What is it about the classification systems? So we have a total discussion of the things that we've learned in this project. And we might even go so far in this final stage to say, what did we learn in this project? What was our takeaway as a group? Not necessarily to point at a single child and say, what was your takeaway? What's our takeaway? And then the children discuss, well, we learned this, well, we already knew that, or no, we didn't know that, and then we learned this other thing, and what would be interesting to learn more about? And so then we point forward. And what I just described for you in a little two-day process is a snail-based project. And the snail is a tool developed by an Australian scholar at the University of Wollongong who works with education, where she observed and described how children learn and what are the activities that characterize different phases of learning, what are the relationships that take place in different phases of learning, and how can adults support them in these phases. So it's a descriptive tool. It has five phases. I have five little flags out here. And it has three levels to each phase, and the levels are named with letters right here. And what I would like to do now, if it's okay with Maria, is I would like to walk the snail and show you. There isn't anything else coming now. Would you like to hand it out now?
Yeah, because then we have your visual and we have the visual okay. In the book. Mm. Or maybe I'm just super excited to hand it out. I don't know. I tried counting you, and it should be just one for each, but please be careful. So if somebody's sitting back not having a book, let me know.
Are there any?
Yeah. We can share one.
Oh, is everybody able to look at one?
Or it's not enough.
Thank you. Spare's here.
Did you get one?
Yes, Spare's here. I've got two left. Anybody needing?
Three left.
Oh.
We can have one each.
Sure. Thanks. And one. For us. Perfect. Yes.
And you jump in when? Yes. So, the mushroom. The first phase of the snail is exploration. And this is space right here. It's the number one.
We call it experience.
Experience. And in the experience, what we do is we explore actively and we use our senses. It's a sense-based approach to any kind of learning. We feel something, we hear something, we smell something, we take it in. And in this case, there's the actions of gathering and running around in the forest. And of course, we use our vision when we're looking for the mushrooms, but without thinking about it, we're using all our other senses. We don't think about it, but those other senses are at work all the time. When it's a little cooler in some areas than in others, our senses notice that. When the ground is softer or harder under our feet, we notice that when we gather the mushrooms. And that forms a part of our beginning knowledge about mushrooms. The roles that we play, and this is what flags are, is that we are explorers. The children are explorers. The children are actively involved in finding out what happens in this environment, what's here.
Now, those are three levels then?
Those are the three levels here in the middle.
So with experience, you have those three?
In all of them, we have the three levels.
Yes.
So we're in phase one. The relations and roles are explorers.
Thanks.
Actually, the activities and the sensory base is the mode of what they're doing.
I see.
And over here is then the field. And the field, all very academic, but there's a reason for it.
Mm.
The field is the subject matter and the level of the subject matter. So when we're in phase one, that children use an everyday language about their subject matter. And their knowledge about the subject matter, the mushrooms, is unsystematic. It's concrete. It's not abstract. It's right there. They have them in their hands. So in the first phase, however you're working with your subject matter, it's going to be unsystematic and distributed. So the activities they're doing, the mode in phase two, is they're sharing, they're talking, they are expressing what happened, and by expressing what they're bringing from the sensory level, from the body level, into their reflective area, in the third brain, the top of the brain, the area where they can access it academically. They express it and they retain it and then they link it to what they already knew. This is a super important part. part of the project or the model is to say that when we need to learn something, it's important to link it what we already know. And phase two, expressing and retaining, links it to what we already know. And it doesn't have to be academic knowledge. We're still in the unsystematic area. It's still important that maybe what we know is that we've gone mushroom hunting before. But that particular little link, cognitively, is super important. As far as the roles go, everybody shares on a par, adults and children. Asmus has no special role here. His experience is not more important. The mushrooms he gathered are not more important. The extra thing he can do is he can nudge. He can nudge in terms of curiosity and questions and pointing some of the statements that the children make or the way they talk into a further exploration. Well, that's an interesting point you make there. I wonder why that is. Has anybody got any thoughts about that? So he could just nudge. It's not his job to teach, and it's certainly not his job to talk all the time. As for the field, we're learning about mushrooms. We're still learning, and we're still working with an everyday language and an everyday grasp of the mushrooms. We're not actually manipulating the mushrooms right now, so we're getting a little bit abstract, but it's still in the everyday realm. So, where's my number three? Is this my three?
Should be.
This is my three. In phase three, they are sorting. This was after lunch, right? So they're sorting the mushrooms. And they're comparing and contrasting what the mushrooms look like. It's a form of experiment, and that's what phase three is. Phase three is experimenting. We're back to manipulating, working with the concrete mushrooms the way we worked in the first phase. The difference here is that we have concrete questions and hypotheses. We wonder about something. In this case, we're wondering which ones are edible. That is the overarching question that we're asking about this. In this case, the question comes out of the entire activity of mushroom gathering. But many times, the questions that we're going to ask in phase three will arise in phase two when we talk about something. We have an unstructured experience, we talk about it, and we start wondering about something, we ask questions, we have hypotheses, and we go into phase three and we try to experiment and manipulate to find out what the answers to our questions might be. So, activity, mode, manipulating. The role here, again, the children are doing the experimenting. Rasmus, the adult, is along for the ride, nudging perhaps, not lecturing, not giving any scientific information, just nudging. Holding fire, as we say. And here, when we're experimenting, we're using the everyday vocabulary. We probably don't know what the mushrooms are named. We probably don't know what the parts are named. But our knowledge level is rising, because in creating a system, we're beginning to think more systematically about the subject matter at hand. And it's really important when the system arises from your own work with the material, and that system has an organic connection to your way of thinking. Now I have a four here somewhere, which is hiding behind you. Number four, phase four. This is the phase that the teachers love. How many teachers are here? Yeah. This is the part the teachers love. In phase four, the children were looking stuff up and they were identifying their mushrooms. And then the teacher got to pull the lens back, to zoom back, and give a lecture, bring the knowledge that they had gained together into an academic framework. And teachers love that. But until phase four in the snail, the teachers must hold fire. They must hold back from giving information. And it's really hard to do, and sometimes it sounds really artificial. But if a child says, what is this mushroom called? You can say, I don't know, what would you call it? And it sounds hard to do sometimes, but it's really important for the teachers to pull back and let the children engage with the material at hand without the mediation of scientific knowledge. So here, the children are researchers. This is their role here. They're researchers, but they're receivers and listeners here. And the adult gets to be a lecturer and a teacher, but also in the looking stuff up phase, just a helper. And now, in phase four, in terms of the field, we're gaining academic terminology. We're learning what the bits and parts, the morphology of the mushroom, are called. We're learning the systems. So we're getting a completely different kind of vocabulary than we had in phase one. And also our knowledge is getting to be really systematic. Isn't it lucky that phase five is in the
You found that so well.
Maria, do you want to sneak in somewhere?
Yeah, I do. I'll sneak in here.
Yeah.
Thanks.
So phase five is about producing, compiling, reviewing, bringing all that knowledge together, and for each trial, creating an external expression of whatever knowledge it was she or he gained in the process of the trial. It's important for many, many children, it's important to allow them to form their knowledge physically. We have a tendency in our school systems and also in our heads to think that the only products that really count are written products or presentations. Mm. But there's plenty of talking and printing and writing that you can use to accompany forming something. And if it's a mushroom made out of clay, or if it's a needle-felted mushroom, or if it's a diorama, it's really important that children be allowed to express their thoughts outside themselves in the physical world. I'm sure I'm preaching to the choir right now. I'm sure all of you know this, but just because we move into the school level, with the school level children, it's important to still let them use their hands to express what's in their minds. So the children are creators and producers, and Rasmus, the adult, gets to step back again. He can help out with academic knowledge, but no more lecturing. That was in phase four, and that's over now. So the teachers have to take a back seat. So what was I missing here? And of course, the knowledge level here is abstract, utilitarian. The language is utilitarian and academic. We have moved from an active physical relationship to the material to an abstract cognitive relationship to the material. And don't be mistaken. Even if the children make an external physical object as their knowledge product, it still corresponds to cognition, to reflection, to an abstract level of engaging with the material. The last part of phase five here is the formative assessment. Cooking the stew, sharing the stew, talking about the stew, talking about what we learned. And I want to point out that along the way in the snail, and I don't want to go back out into the rain, but at the end of two and at the end of three, there were little tiny formative assessment processes when they presented to each other the conclusions, the processes that they engaged in, both with the sorting and also with the, the sorting and also their second phase of sorting, where they then sort according to the mediated knowledge, the screens and the books and the apps, that they present that to each other. That's also a built-in formative assessment process. So, that was a lot of talking. Do you want to take over a little bit?
Yeah, I do.
In the rain?
Stay here for a bit. I will explain first, and then we'll go into the rain afterwards. Okay. So, in the first presentation, we focused quite a lot on this zone of risky unknowingness, the uneasiness that comes to a lot of teachers and educators when we do something where the academic part of it is only just one-fifth of the phase four. And one of the things that you discovered in the Green Free School that you probably know is that it's because we are so tied up in structures and institutions, but also in expectations and our own habits of thinking in special ways, and the kids' habits, and even the kids' parents' expectations and habits. So we're so tied up in it. And I would like for us to have a physical experience of that,
and maybe also how we can step out of it. So I need one to be the guide here. Free willing person. What is that?
A volunteer.
Volunteer. Okay. Yay, great. Karen, will you take our volunteer a little bit away so you can hear what's going on? Oh my god, it's raining so much. We're gonna have to do a speed version of this.
There's a shelter.
Okay, what we're gonna do is it's a Danish traditional children's play. It's called Kludderma, Kludermo. And the general idea, okay, we're gonna do it in here. The general idea is we make a circle holding hands, and then we will try to clutter up the circle by moving